The Tale of the Frozen Pussy, Slipper Trip, The Million Dollar Fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will hear on Miami Memoirs. Join Florida attorney Louis Ress as he recounts his 6 decades of legal practice in the wilds of South Florida.
This next chapter is called Meet the Boss. It's an unusual experience that happened to me as I progressed in my professional practice. I started off at the very bottom, and all these stories are true. I keep saying that.
Right.
I was now one of the 3 approved attorneys for the Aetna Casualty and Surety Company, 3 approved in Miami. So what happened was I started out with nothing. I met a fellow playing tennis. I started to do some legal work for him. I was desperate. He said, well, he was an adjuster with the Aetna Casualty and Surety Company, and he started to send me what was called friendly suits, which involved the settlement of claims of children, of minors, that are in accidents and they're injured. And the court has to approve those settlements. You got to bring the child in or they send in your forms for the judge to look at and to approve it. And then the parents become the guardian of the child and they get a bank account and they have to put the money in the bank account and use it for the child's benefit. They can't stick it in their pocket.
Right.
So there's a set of papers that you file and involves a hearing. And I started to do that. I was making at that time $37.50 a week. I had just gotten a raise to $50 because I was just admitted to the Florida bar. And I was billing for that stuff. I sent them a bill for like $75, and the bill came back with a note, call me. And I called, his name was Bernie Baker, his real name, with the Aetna. And I called Bernie, and he said, Louis, your bill is terrible. I said, what do you mean? He says, send me a bill for $250 and it'll be 50% of what the big boys downtown charge. So $250, that was over a month's salary for me.
Right.
For one thing, for a few hours of work. Well, I wound up doing 1 or 2 of those a week. I was rich. I paid, I had money to flowing. So I was now, and I tried a big case for the Aetna and won it. It was a workers' comp case. And it involved a woman who fell at the Stanley Works. I don't know if that's been broadcast. It's coming up if it hasn't been. It was a woman, Stanley Tool Company, and okay. She fell and she injured her back. And I showed that it was a fraud. And I showed that she had had the same injury years before that this was a fake. And we won the case. Well, it was the first workers' compensation case that the Stanley Tool Company had won in the state of Florida since they started doing business down here.
Oh, wow.
So they insisted that I become their attorney and handle all of their work. They were a national assured of the Aetna, and they were a big account. So now I was the attorney for one of their big accounts. So the Aetna took me in. Coming from a minority group, first Northerners, the Southerners hated Northerners, and then being Jewish, the Southerners hated Jews. And between that, they hated blacks even more. They hated Catholics too. They were busy hating. As a matter of fact, they even hated you if you were in the same church, and they hated you if you were in the same pew. They would find reasons to hate one another.
They just didn't like anybody.
Hate was trumping love, I can tell you. So now is the time that I had to go meet the boss. The Aetna Casualty was really the Cadillac of insurance companies. Those were the days of the Fleetwood and the Eldorado. I don't know if you know what they were, models of the Cadillac. Huge cars. They had chrome strips along the side. They had those huge rear fins floating boats like. They were beautiful. Cadillac was synonymous, the same as prestige or the best. To be an Aetna attorney was to have a Cadillac pedigree. You were respected. You actually represented their insured clients. And some of them were very, very prestigious. And I was just telling you, the Stanley Tool Company, Chrysler Corporation, the Catholic Diocese, Walgreens, the University of Miami, the local CBS television channel. That's the kind of clients that I was representing. And it opened doors. You got to know the clients, and then they asked you to do other work for them. And it became a source to build your practice. And it was a top source. So I started really at the top. By accident. And the Aetna had its claims office down on West Flagler Street near Northwest 27th Avenue on the ground floor. And I was invited down there to meet the claims manager, Mr. Ivy. And he was the southeastern claims manager for the Aetna. And he was an older, humorless, straight-faced, you know, very flat balding man with a narrow face and a thin, narrow tie dangling inside an ill-fitted light tan sports coat. Evidently, he was a Yankee, but he had acclimated and adapted to the South. Mr. Ivy didn't say very much. He told me that he wanted me to meet Mr. Benton just across the hall. I looked for my friend Bernie Baker, the claims adjuster, who had a desk along with 10 other Aetna adjusters in a somewhat cramped quarters, but he was not there. Bernie had been a true mentor. He was not having anything to deal with imperious attorneys anymore. He was not happy with them. He didn't like the large downtown firms. He found them arrogant and overpriced and above all prejudiced. And he was right. They were. They were busy hating. They were primarily involved in hating. That's why he sponsored me and he guided me. He was trying to dislodge them. I was now up to the point where I was handling accident cases for the Aetna, automobile accidents. I started off doing papers for settlement of minors, claims of minors. Then I wound up doing some workers' compensation. And now I was up to doing automobile accidents. Well, it was a huge business. One client like that, and you didn't have to worry, you were made, could run a whole office. So at Bernie's suggestion, I had gone out with Bernie and a photographer, Sal. We would go out at the beginning of these large cases in order to gain a better perspective and to meet the witnesses and to examine the accident scene. In other words, he brought me in right from the beginning. I didn't get the file after the thing had already been investigated. I was part of the investigation, and it helped a lot. It really did. It provided valuable insight into the case, and even more importantly, it pleased Bernie. Bernie was my friend. He was my mentor. He had recommended me to his fellow adjusters once I got on the approved list, and the Aetna approved me as their attorneys. They only had three in Dade County. The business was rolling in, both in workers' compensation and in automobile liability. It was now time to meet the real boss, but Bernie was not there to introduce and support me, and I felt like a lamb being led to the slaughter. The Aetna office was in the same building, which was owned by a big insurance agency, Benton, Jefferson, and Smith. They were right across the hall from the Aetna. The building was named the Benton Building, and there was a large sign on the roof, and I'm talking about 3 feet high. And the letters were huge, and they said, Benton, Jefferson, and Smith Insurance Agency. And underneath it said, Aetna Casualty Insurance Company. So they were writing for the Aetna. They were an insurance agent, but they were mainly the Aetna's agent. Although the Benton Insurance Agency placed insurance with many companies, the Aetna was special. The Benton firm had a very close relationship with the Aetna. They had friends in the state office in Tampa. They had relatives in the Aetna's home office in Hartford. Then the Benton yacht was always available when executives came down from Connecticut in February. It was always February. The Benton Group were University of Miami graduates and trustees. They were trustees of the university. They gave them a lot of money, and they placed the insurance for the U with the Aetna. They all drove Cadillacs. They all had 50-yard line seats for the football games. These were rich, powerful people. Mr. Ivy, the Aetna claims manager, took me across the hall to introduce me to the Benton Group. Three partners, each had large, glassed-in private offices with high-backed executive chairs. Each office was decorated with the University of Miami memorabilia, certificates of awards of all kinds, bronze statues, medals, plaques, footballs, banners, and pictures with the university's past and present presidents. There were about 50 agents working at their own gray metal desks at the Benton agency. They were all lined up in three rows in front of the partners' offices. We were heading towards the conference room, and I could see three large men in suits with vests already sitting at the table. I had checked around, and I knew that I was being produced and displayed and examined for Mr. Benton's approval. Mr. Benton Sr. Was a well-known anti-Semite. He did not like Jews. I looked around that place with those 60 people. I didn't see a woman. I didn't see anyone that appeared to be brown or dark, or I didn't see a Jewish-looking guy, or I didn't hear a Jewish name. And I had that uncomfortable feeling. There's a certain feeling you get. It's hard to explain, where you know you're in a crowd that is, you're not. It's like attending American Nazi Party or the Ku Klux Klan meeting, and they're burning a cross. You sort of feel you don't belong there.
Yeah.
So They were all wearing jackets and ties. They all had blonde hair. They all had blue eyes.
Oh, God.
And, you know, I began to feel like Woody Allen at a, you know, dairy farmer's kitchen table in the Midwest. You remember that in the movie Annie Hall,
I think? Right, yeah.
That's how I felt, like Woody Allen sitting there. They're all looking at me. They're looking for the horns. Well, just then, one of the junior executives came rushing out of the conference room and exclaimed, "Hey, you're Lou Ress from George Case's office. I know you. I'm Steve Christie, and George and I are in Kiwanis together." Boy, was I relieved. He took me by the arm, and he escorted me into the conference room, and he said, "Gentlemen, this is Lou Ress. He's George Case's associate, and he's a great guy." Steve Christie saved the day because I was accepted. And that's,
it worked out okay.
That's the story. So what is the story? Luck, 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 and more luck. So when they say luck isn't important, it's very, very important. So all these stories, I say, have an undercurrent. What's more important? The guy, you know, that studies hard and works hard and goes to try the case and does his best and... Or the guy that walks in and just lucky, somebody on the jury looks at him and says, "Geez, you're smiling at him and everything." And he finds out that somewhere down the line, the guy had met him years before and he had done him a favor, and the guy swings the jury for him, you know. So it's luck. It's luck. And my whole life at that point professionally was based on luck. I was playing tennis at the right time.
Met
Bernie Baker, who... luckily said to me, "If you play tennis, practice law the way you play tennis, you're a tiger." So then I became the attorney for Bernie Baker. So then he brought me into the Aetna. Well, one thing leads to the other, because through the Aetna, a lot of their assureds went out and became self-insureds because they were so big. They, instead of paying premiums and having insurance, they self-insured. They put the money in a pot in a bank account and paid out their own claims and either hired private adjustment companies like Crawford and Company to come in and investigate the claims, or they set up their own departments and they did it themselves. So I was very lucky because they would ask me to stay on and represent them very often. So I got to be the attorney for the Diocese of Miami. I was the only Jewish attorney in the history of the world, I think, to represent the Catholic Church. But I did.
That's worth looking up to see.
It was wonderful. We had a wonderful relationship. And turns out that Steve Christie, who came running out of the conference room, turned out to be a great guy, a really decent person. So I started to think about insurance companies and diversity. You think things have changed?
Probably not.
No, not very much. That was 1956.
Oh, wow.
That happened. In 1956, there was separate but equal. Black people had to get off the sidewalk if you were walking towards them and get into the street. They couldn't go into a restaurant. They couldn't go into a movie theater. They couldn't check into a hotel. They couldn't go in the public library. If they went into the courthouse, they had to drink from a separate fountain and go into separate bathrooms. They couldn't go on a railroad train. They couldn't go into a railroad waiting room that's separate for colored. They couldn't go on a bus. You can't believe how severely bad it was and how much it's changed. And when people complain about their rights being inadequate and unequal, they're right, but they didn't live through what I saw, where it was really terrible.
Right.
And so in their parents' lifetime, things changed enormously. So I looked around today and I said, what percentage of insurance companies have women as a CEO? It's a lot of insurance companies. You think women would 50-50 now?
No.
Well,
no,
they come doctors and lawyers 50-50.
I'm not going to believe that it's 50-50.
Okay.
I'm too cheap.
Take a guess. What percentage of CEOs and of insurance companies?
10?
Try one.
Oh, boy.
1%. How many people work in the insurance industry? Do you know?
Not a clue.
Okay. 1.6 million workers today work in the insurance industry. I looked it up because I knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
19% of the boards are women, okay? That's 1 in 5. So if you have a 10-person board, you maybe have 2 women on it.
Right.
11% are inside officers. In other words, not CEOs, but they're vice presidents of some kind. They have some kind of administrative title. Uh-huh. It's very, very, very difficult. Well, we go back to diversity. There was a lot of arguments about America, you know, what it was. They say, you make America great again. Well, America was always great, but if you look back, you don't want to have it though in those days. By the way, that came, make America great again, it came from Ronald Reagan in 1980. And I think Trump used it in 2012 after Obama beat Romney. But America wasn't great on diversity, and it's improving. It's still got a long way to go.